You're listening to MHC Live, Digital Grace for Madison, hosted by Philip Pommertree with Randy Ray and Jean LaRue, brought to you from the refuge that we call Madison Heights Church.
This is a podcast about bringing digital grace to Madison and beyond. I'm the host, Philip Pommertree, Director of Discipleship at Madison Heights Church, and we have our producer, Jean LaRue, with us, and the pastor at Madison Heights, Randy Ray. Glad to have both of you here. It's our job today to start talking about the mission of Madison Heights, not just as some sort of promotional deal or just something that we're kind of talking to members and reinforcing, but talking about something that really is at the heart of understanding what it is to walk with the Lord in a relationship that is by grace alone, through faith alone, in Christ alone. And that does come right into the mission statement that the leadership at Madison Heights drafted and approved just a few years ago. And it's this: our mission is to be a refuge for broken people where we experience the grace of Christ and express the truth of Christ. The truth of the gospel. That's right.
You're fired.
Let me say it again. And it's right here in front of me.
We're going to leave it in there.
Okay.
You're a broken person.
There it is. There's crack number one of this last 5 minutes. Our mission, let me say it again then. Our mission is to be a refuge for broken people where we experience the grace of Christ and express the truth of the gospel. And it's that word refuge that I'd like for us to unpack here. Refuge for broken people. When you use the word refuge, I'll start with you, Randy. What do you mean?
When we were doing the mission statement, the word that came up over and over and over where we got refuge was when we asked people, what is it like? What is Madison Heights like? And they would use the words real and they would use the word safe. Came up over and over and over amidst other words. And so refuge became this idea of it's a place that's safe, you're protected, you're provided for. It's when the sirens go off in your life and the storm is coming, it's the place that you head to for shelter.
I think I remember in those conversations, there was somebody that referenced that picture. I think that's outside like a lot of the firehouses and stuff like that, where that yellow picture where the arms are around somebody telling kids like this is a safe place. And so those were some of the images, some of the imagery that came out. Like that's what the church is supposed to be. It's supposed to be a refuge, a safe place for people who have run to that place.
Yeah, you know, we all grew up in that era of the civil defense, you know, films in school, you know, on the projector and all of that. And there were those, but before the thing with the arms, there was that fallout shelter sign that was at a church or a fire station or a library. And you know, growing up in that Cold War era, there was that thought in your mind, what would you do if the worst thing you could imagine happened?
Yeah, where would you go, right?
Yeah, where would you go?
Not to church. And that's why it was such a big deal to us, because all of our backgrounds are different, but that's the last place that I would have gone when the sirens were either going off or I had pulled the pin out of a grenade on accident again in my own life. It was the place where you showed up and had the same conversation in the hallways all the time. How are you? Fine. How are you? Fine. How are your kids? Everybody's fine, fine, fine all the time. It's not. And it was frustrating to me growing up. Why can't we come here and be real and vulnerable, needing a safe place, because we're all broken and dealing with sin in our life.
That idea of vulnerability is a big one, to be able to say that this is a place that's a refuge. And if I'm going to a refuge, there's a reason. You know, something has happened. So I walk in the door. You know, people always say, like, I'm so glad my daughter's dating a boy. He's a Christian, and they're so thankful for that. And you say, you understand that the first thing he had to declare in becoming a Christian was that he was a sinner, that he needed a place to go. He needed Christ in his life.
Yeah, and even in seasons of your life that appear to be going well, the primary thing that you need a refuge from is yourself. You are the problem.
Yeah, it's funny how that happens. I tend to create strains and chaos and conflict everywhere. I don't know why everybody else outside of me doesn't, you know, get the message and, you know, get in line. That's
right. Funny. I mean, if it's just you alone, you'd be totally fine. I saw one time I was leaving a church and they had a sign going out of the parking lot that said, "Your mission field begins here." And it was the sign facing all the members. It was the last thing they saw before they stepped out onto the street or drove out onto the street to the world that's out there, the thems that are out there. And I remember thinking to myself, if you want to put that in a theologically accurate place, put it over the mirrors in the bathroom. You know, that my mission field has got to begin there with me, because the refuge is for people like me who self-destruct.
Yeah. Safe place where, I love the story with Jesus that's caught in the woman on adultery. I mean, that's one of our favorites, that he what Jesus does is cover her shame. And I think that's what you find in a safe place. When you've blown it and you're repentant in your sin, we want to cover your shame and at the same time revel in the gospel to you and with you. And it's safe because you're safe from being judged, you're safe from being gossip, all those sorts of things.
Jean, you were involved in the crafting of this mission statement and this refuge concept. What else you want to bring to that conversation?
Well, I think the reality of it, Randy said it perfectly, that it really is that idea that words like safe place and other things were used to describe how Madison Heights felt to people emotionally, experientially. But we made a lot of emphasis when we did it on really just one word, and that was that Madison Heights was a refuge, not the refuge. And that distinction is huge, because the refuge is Jesus himself. Madison Heights is a refuge, which is part of the body of Christ, but it's not the refuge. It's not the only one. And one of the things I love about Randy's preaching, the narrative that he brings from his leadership in the pulpit, is that he is always regularly saying, like, listen, we're just one of the refuges in this city. We're not the only one. We're not the best one. We are one of many. And so that's a beautiful thing, to be part of that in the body of Christ.
Absolutely. And something that's very subtle that you have to be careful of is replacing your relationship with Jesus with your relationship with the church. The church is not the refuge. God is our refuge. And we are just a refuge that's trying to point people towards him. So we in new members' classes and things like that, we spend a lot of time trying to make sure that people understand that distinction and that word is, the word A is a big distinction.
And look, on a personal note, for me, you know, I joined the staff at Madison Heights back in the early fall, 2023. And one of the things
when you kicked me out, when you took my job?
That's right.
Thank you, Phil. Where was I supposed to go for a refuge when that happened?
That's right.
Thank you, Phil.
You were defined a refuge somewhere.
Thanks for opening up that wound.
So it's how quickly can we move Jean out was once the job offer conversation got serious.
He needed a different island.
Sorry, I interrupted you. Go ahead.
Yeah. Back to my serious point. Madison Heights being committed to that as a part of its identity, you know, this is who we are, is something that really was greatly appealing to me. And I've been a pastor for almost 30 years, 28 years. And I've been in, you know, a couple usually smaller town situations, but also in a larger community, big university town as well. And you know, one of the things that you see over time is, yeah, you see that often church is the place, the last place where people want to go when the addiction overwhelms them, or when this scandal breaks out in their lives, or where they're just worn down and they don't know why. And I think it really is an important place to start if you want to, you know, bring the grace of Christ right, bring the medicine right to the wound and right to the point of need. So I'm gonna, all that leads up to a question that I have for Randy. What does it look like on a personal level, day to day, to have Jesus, as we were talking about him earlier, as the refuge of our weary souls?
I remember one time when our oldest son was becoming a member of the church, and we always give the kids Bibles after they go through the communicants class. And I remember John Piper said one time, his father wrote in a Bible that he gave to him, sin will keep you from this book, or this book will keep you from sin. And I remember I wrote that in my son's Bible when I gave it to him. And about a year later, went back and wrote, "But when you do sin, come back to this book." And to answer your question, it was this. It's when we sin, everything in us, all of our inner Pharisee wants to run away. And it's then the time that grace bids us to run back. And it's over and over. The point where we're most broken is when we need the refuge the most. And so it's always knowing there's never anything that I'm going to do that he doesn't know. He already knows the things that I'm going to do. And he's always a safe place for me to run back to and revel in the gospel.
You remember in Luke 15 where the son is in the far country, and it says in the text something to the effect of he remembered his father's house. That at his father's house, the servants had more than plenty. And so it was the character and the nature of the father that brought him back, the generous, loving, open arms. And then you have that father who jumps off the porch and runs toward him. In the story that Jesus is telling, this beautiful autobiographical story, he's like, "You want to know what my father's like? This is what he's like." And so for us personally, to have that knowledge that he's like that is remarkable. I love that you did that as a dad for your son. Mm-hmm.
There's a illustration in a sermon that I've used it a couple of times. I forget where I read it from, but it was about a couple in Brazil, and they had a daughter, and they were poor, and she got tired of living in poverty. And so as soon as she turned 17 or 18, whatever it was, she left and went to the city to make a life for herself, which there aren't a lot of ways to do that, obviously. And so the parents tried to contact her and couldn't find her and got worried. And after about a month figuring what she might have fallen into for a living, they went to every hotel at the front desk, made 100 copies of her picture and wrote on it with permission to put it where you would check into the hotel, hoping she would see it. Her name, and said, "Whatever you have done, whatever you've become, please come home."
Yeah.
That's what we mean when we say a refuge. Mm. Whatever we've done, whatever we've become, it's never not safe to come home. Mm.
And one thing I think about from time to time is just I go about community, and you go, you know, you go pick up a pizza somewhere, you go do business here, you travel there, listen to people talk, look at the kind of things people talk about on Facebook. Everybody's got something that they're at least going to try to use as a refuge. You know, that it may be a vacation home, it may be a bar, it may be romance and relationship, it may be some goal they have for retirement or whatever. And then there are also great refuges that are set up in our community that help people in a lot of ways, like 12-step programs and that kind of thing, which are kind of also work in this way that help people with addictions, for instance, you know, gain some strength and community and support and keep them going. What distinguishes this kind of refuge we're talking about from all the other refuges that are out there, that are some that are harmful and some that are really good?
Not to cast shade on any of the refuges that are very helpful, but what we mean when we talk about the church being a refuge is something that has more history than the modern phenomena of a recovery program. That this has been the place for as long as the history of Israel existed, where it was pictured in the ark, right? It was pictured in the caduceus when the snake is held up on the stick, and you looked at that when you were bitten. All the places where you go over and over again to be safe from the wrath, the blood on the doorpost, the blood on the lentils. God's story. I mean, if he was going to self-identify as something, he's the original refuge. He's the place to whom you go when life goes bad. And so I think those recovery programs are amazing because they help people. To Randy's point earlier, you know, all of them that I know of begin with, "The problem is me," right? Yeah. And the question is, where do I take me?
Yeah, because the thing about a lot of the refuges I mentioned are places where, yeah, you're really trying to, in a sense, kind of turn back in on yourself, whether that's a man cave or the hunting lodge or wherever it is that you're kind of escaping. But, you know, we're not talking about going further away into darkness. And so we're talking about coming, like, well, First John talks, about it that way, about coming into the light, isn't it, Randy?
Yeah, no, I messed up my illustration a minute ago. What the parents wrote on the picture was, whatever you've become, whatever you've done, we love you. Please come home. That's what differentiates the refuge from other refuges. We're begging you to come back home because of the Father loves us because of what Jesus has done. That's the difference.
So, I mean, go ahead.
Listen, I've benefited a lot from 12-step programs, whether it's Codependence Anonymous, CODA, being children of alcoholics, adult children of alcoholics. Those things have been incredibly helpful. And I'm sure there are people who are listening who would say, wait, are we trying to say, or are we saying that those things aren't particularly helpful? In no way, shape, or form.
No.
What I would add to those, I would add an and, not a but. And I would say, please go to AA. Please go to NA. Please go to CODA. Please go to those meetings. And know, when they offer to you the option to fill in the blank, that there is a Father who will sign his name in the blank.
Yeah. And I think that's one of the things that makes us a safe place. We want to have you here as the refuge for your weary soul. And at the same time, you may need to go to AA to fight against the struggle.
Yeah.
And we might go with you. I mean, if you're afraid to go, if you're embarrassed to go, I think that either and or is a great statement.
Yeah, yeah. And because, you know, you hear people talk about all those things when it happens. And even for myself, people say, well, and it's said now in our culture kind of colloquially, like, oh, do you have daddy issues? Yeah, yes, I absolutely do. But a revised version of Jimmy LaRue is not my answer. The Father who sits on the throne of heaven, who says to me, I will not ever cast you away. That is my answer. I love my dad. He's been an amazing father. And he could never be enough. And it's got to be the Father who sits on the throne.
Yeah, so the refuge then we're talking about is not just simply a place to hide, but it's really about coming home, isn't it?
Yeah, it is 100% not a place to hide. It's a place to know and be known.
Yeah, and I think that's a really important thing to say. I'm glad our conversation kind of drifted that way. It wasn't in the notes, but the notes are that's exactly where we need to go with this. Is not a place to run and hide, but a place to know and be known. Just before we wrap this up, Randy, just speak a little further, if you would, into that. How important is it that we be known by other people? Because sometimes I've talked to people through the years who've gone through some real difficulties in a marriage coming to an end, or with addiction or something like that, and they say, "Well, things are good between me and God," and that's kind of where it starts and where it ends. Mm-hmm. But what are you saying when you say, "Now we're inviting you to come to know and be known"?
For us specifically, we're really, really big on community at our church. And you can't have community if you're not willing to know and be known. If you're not willing to be intimate in terms of letting other people see into you. And there's no greater freedom or safety that you'll experience as a believer as bringing your sin out of darkness into the light. Going back to where we started, that's where you rejoice in the gospel again, that we're forgiven. And so you can't do that if you're not willing to let other people know where your sin and your brokenness is. So we're a safe place for you to take the things that are, we always say, where the enemy wants you is alone with your sin, because that's where you're dangerous. He's powerless when that sin is brought into the light with other people that love you, that know you, that don't judge you, that will walk with you, that'll pray with you, that'll go back to the gospel with you. That's what we mean.
Well, and I think that probably a good place for us to, you know, throw a little teaser out there and say, stay tuned, because it's the refuge for broken people. And that's where we're headed, right? I mean, the church is the original Me Too movement. And so to really be able to say, you're going to come to a place, not where we go, oh, bless your heart. We're going to say Me Too. And so.
Yeah. That's a good way to tie this one up here. And as we've talked today about the need that we have of a refuge, the term that's out there in our culture that you are enough is it, I don't know any other way to say it than that it's a lie, that we're not enough to handle this on our own. And God is a God who welcomes and receives those who will, who will flee to him, who will call on him. You know, I love that picture in the Old Testament about calling on the Lord, that sometimes it's not even, can I, you know, you may be so deep in a hole that you may feel like, I can't get out of here. Well, God just says, call on me in the day of trouble. You know, just call. And God will work. So I appreciate you, Jean and Randy, entering this conversation and helping us think about that today. All right. We appreciate all of you in for giving us some of your time and listening. We really would like you to follow MHC Live Podcast on your podcast app, to leave a positive rating, a review if you like what you hear. We really appreciate you listening to MHC Live, and we hope you'll join us on our next episode. We're going to go a little further about what it is to be broken and be around broken people, and the grace of Christ that we can experience because He is so full of love for sinners and love for broken people like us. The reason we're doing this podcast is we're just trying to talk about it as much as we can and share it with as many people as we can. If this is helpful, not just to you, but to somebody else, feel free to share it with them. So thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you next time on MHC Live.
Like what you heard? Want more? Go to MHC.live. That's MHC.live for more episodes or to subscribe. If you want more information about Madison Heights Church, go to graceformadison.com. That's Grace, F-O-R, Madison.com. Thanks for listening.